building, first and foremost, that baseline of AI literacy amongst service providers, an understanding and a comfort. But then there's the continuing education piece. In the same way that we expect clinicians to remain up to speed on the latest clinical trials or changes to practice.
Welcome to Coming of Age, a podcast that is changing the conversation on aging. I'm your host, Donna Duncan, CEO of the Ontario Long-Term Care Association. This season, season four of Coming of Age, we welcome an exciting roster of guests from around the world, thought leaders who are at the forefront of transforming seniors' living and care and are shaping the future for all of us as we age. Subscribe now to Coming of Age and be part of our community dedicated to meeting the needs of our aging population. Imagine a future where seniors living in care are enabled by artificial intelligence and technology. What do you see? In Canada, groundbreaking projects are pushing the boundaries with machine learning and providing a glimpse into the future. From predictive decision-making to quicker, more efficient care delivery, the possibilities are endless. In today's episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Roxana Sultan, Chief Data Officer and Vice President of Health at the Vector Institute, located in Toronto, Canada. This globally renowned AI institute is empowering researchers, businesses, governments, and individuals to develop and adopt AI responsibly. Roxana leads Vector's data and technology strategies, as well as its healthcare practice. She oversees data governance, high-performance computing, and cybersecurity initiatives. She has more than 20 years of leadership in the Ontario health system, including roles at the Princess Margaret Cancer Centre, the Canadian Institutes of Health Research, and Cancer Care Ontario. Roxana also holds an adjunct professorship at the University of Toronto's Dalhousie School of Public Health, where she teaches intelligent medicine and machine learning. Vector Institute is collaborating with companies, organizations, and individuals across all sectors to turn AI research into real-world applications. In this episode, Roxana is going to share thoughts from AI projects in hospital settings and discuss what these advancements could mean for broader health systems, including seniors living in care. Let's dive in. This episode was generously sponsored by our sector champion, Point Click Care. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Coming of Age. I am delighted today to welcome Roxana Sultan, the Chief Data Officer and Vice President Health at the Vector Institute. So welcome, Roxana.
Thank you very much, Donna. It's great to be here, and I'm very excited to chat about artificial intelligence with you.
Well, it's such a timely topic for us. We hear a lot about the use of robotics and AI in Japan and other jurisdictions. We have a lot of our long-term care homes who are using robots in their long-term care homes. So really wanted to dig in today with you to really talk about what's actually happening in the world of artificial intelligence. To start, we all talk about AI, but I'm wondering if maybe you could just unpack it a bit for us. And so when we talk about AI and when you're talking about artificial intelligence, what does it actually mean? What is artificial intelligence?
Artificial intelligence really refers to the ways in which we simulate human intelligence, and we do that in machines. These are machines that are programmed to think and to learn and to reason like human beings do. So if we think about an AI-enabled machine, what is it capable of doing? Well, it can mimic cognitive functions like human learning, decision-making, problem-solving. Here at my organization, the Vector Institute, you often hear us talking about machine learning. So that is essentially where machines can learn from information that we provide to them, and they can improve over time how they respond to that learning. So they can either reason in the same way humans do or solve complex problems in the way that humans do. And they can consistently improve how they do that over time through these types of approaches called machine learning. This can also include things like processing language. So the machine learns how to understand and generate human language, computer vision, where the machine learns how to perceive visual information, and robotics, where the machine, is a physical machine that's capable of performing physical tasks in the world. And so AI has applications across industries ranging from finance to transportation to manufacturing. But of course, the area where I get most excited about is how we can apply AI in healthcare.
Well, and to that point, Roxanne, I know that in Ontario, the Vector Institute has a number of AI projects in hospital settings. So what are we learning from those projects? Can we replicate them for other care settings?
One of the areas where AI has really been driving improvements is personalized and preventive health care. So we've implemented projects with our health system partners to use tools like your smartphone or a wearable device to monitor signals in an individual that allow us to infer information about that person's health. So for example, if the device is monitoring vital signs like health, your heart rate or your blood pressure, to detect anomalies in real time, it can then alert if something is going wrong, and it can connect that individual to a virtual care support. So the AI algorithms that are embedded in these tools essentially analyze the data that's coming through to predict whether a potential health issue may be occurring even before it becomes critical, right? So that allows you to intervene in a timely way and prevent an outcome from being worse than it potentially could be at this moment. So one such initiative that we implemented targeted a congestive heart failure patient population. This was done through the University Health Network. And they have had the result of reducing hospitalizations by half and improving the nurse-to-patient ratio by more than 6 times. And we've heard from patients that they feel much more supported because they know that they're being monitored on a continuous basis. It's not just when they show up for an appointment or a checkup that they're getting active care. They're getting active care all the time. And so these types of models allow us to pinpoint risk and to identify when somebody is, at risk of a poor health outcome and provide support before things get worse. And, you know, you asked a very important question about scale. How do we scale these types of things? And that's an area where we're spending a lot of time and effort focusing on how can you take something that you've done successfully with one center and make it available across a larger population. And that's easier said than done. You do need to be able to have the systems and supports to train these models on large amounts of patient information and data, and that requires all kinds of protections to ensure that we're working safely with data, we're doing it in a privacy-enabled way, we're not creating any additional risks, and that is a much larger proposition for, for example, a province or a country than it is for just one center. So that's where we're spending a lot of time and effort right now, is figuring out how do you scale successful initiatives so that we can really impact larger populations.
Well, and that's such a great point, Roxanne. When you talk about the University Health Network initiative in Toronto, and it's the largest hospital in Canada, as we think about the pace of change that's actually required. So we have a shortage of nurses, shortage of primary care. We have 45,000 people waiting for long-term care just in Ontario alone. We know from our research that the majority of seniors and their families actually don't anticipate that they're going to need any specialized care. They haven't planned for any kind of specialized care as they age. as you frame the congestive heart failure initiative, it seems to me that there's such an opportunity here to use scarce resources better, to actually support people in their goal of aging in place and staying at home. But also, even if they want to, there may not be services available in their local communities. What is the potential for the pace of change, given the pressure that our system certainly under now, but also every other country we speak with is facing the same pressure? Is there a way to increase the pace of change and the uptake and the scale? And what would we need as we think about either home and community care, long-term care, keeping people in their communities so that we ensure that people are kept well and that only those who really need to go into a hospital will go into a hospital?
Technology is advancing rapidly. So how can we keep pace with the technological change and make sure that we are meeting the pressures that we're facing as a society? And I think this is really something that requires a multifaceted approach. So if you think about the role of policymakers, of healthcare leaders, we need to work collaboratively to create a robust framework of how we integrate AI into our systems to drive that improvement in quality, to drive that efficiency, to ensure that we can do more with less, because we know we're struggling with system pressures like access to health human resources. You know, a key part of this, I think, is developing clear regulatory guidelines for AI in health services, and that applies across the board from everything from primary care to acute care to long-term care. We need to cover aspects like data privacy, security, accuracy, transparency, and ensure that we have a balance between the need for access to data and the need for trust and safety. And as I said, the technology is advancing so quickly. If we're thinking about applying such technologies in areas as sensitive as healthcare, we need to make sure that they're trustworthy and that they're safe. And so we need a balance between ensuring that we're meeting the needs and we're keeping pace.
You've spoken a lot about the data, and I've heard you say the future use of AI and predictive modeling is only as good as the information we feed it. We've really been stepping back over the last number of years in the work of the Ontario Long-Term Care Association and really trying to have a view from a population perspective as to who are our residents. And instead of taking more of a disease-based approach or simply saying our residents are older, what are the complex needs of our residents? And so we have a lot of work to do with data, and we need to do better as we collect the information, but also to your earlier point around some of these pathways, how we share data. But clearly, data is going to be king in this future world. And I'm just curious, how do we get better data? And then how do we integrate it into the health system, given that there are parts of the health system that actually don't have solid data infrastructure?
I started my role at the Vector Institute leading the health portfolio, but that very quickly expanded to my role as chief data officer, because so much of what we were trying to accomplish in health was contingent upon getting it right when it comes to data governance and how we work safely with data. So, you know, fundamentally, data is the lifeblood of AI, and the quality of the AI solutions that you develop is directly tied to the quality and the quantity of the data that you use to train those models. So if the data that you use to train a model is used to determine how we eat, how we exercise, how we stay safe, how we receive medical care, then we should want those models to be trained with data that represents all of us and all of our unique dimensions. And so the more we can make data available across our various interactions with the healthcare system and even other public services. And by linking these data together to form a comprehensive picture of an individual's health and well-being, the better the AI-enabled solutions will be for truly personalized care. Now, with that being said, the more we link data points from different aspects of an individual's life, the more we increase the possibility of being able to re-identify that individual more easily, right? Because we know more things about them and their unique traits. And the more we converge on that uniqueness of the person, the more we know who they might be. So this is really where data governance comes in, because we need to strike the balance between enabling access to data so that we can unlock its potential for AI and machine learning with the need to protect and preserve individual privacy and the security of the data. So we're spending a lot of time at Vector focusing on the both technical as well as the policy sides of how we can ensure that safety around development of AI solutions and protection of data and the governance of data in a way that ensures that we have that broader lens of trust and safety. And we've actually published 6 AI trust and safety principles to support the development and deployment of AI models, which means, for higher risk domains like healthcare, you want to make sure that any work you're doing on data governance or AI development is anchored in those types of trust and safety principles. I recognize that, we're dealing with a healthcare system that includes, organizations using different electronic records, different systems. There's challenges with interoperability. We've had some success with our partner hospitals in addressing that in certain use cases. We do have right now a partnership with Unity Health where there's a large acute care database that's been established that is optimized for use in AI and machine learning, fully privacy enabled under the right security and governance. But that is just one small window into the average patient's healthcare journey, right? That's just the acute care episode. So how do we expand that out to primary care, to long-term care, to other domains of care? And that's a hill we have yet to climb. I think there's a lot of work that we can leverage in terms of the successes we've had so far, but there's still a lot that we need to do both at the policy level as well as at the technical level to expand into other areas where we know there are challenges with interoperability and data quality and data completeness and data availability.
You've raised a great point, and you've spoken a lot about the pace of technological change. So you've got a clear focus on governance, on data protection, safety, privacy. How do we reconcile the fact that government and governance and policy development is not especially nimble? We know the rhythms of how regulations get made, how laws get drafted, and even the operational governance of an organization, whether it's a hospital or a long-term care home, can be less than nimble. And yet the public is impatient because of our Apple Watches that can tell us what our heart rate is and our blood oxygen levels and our mobility, because we can do Zoom and see people immediately. There's less tolerance for things that take a long time. And in the health system, we're still using fax machines. How do you reconcile this more protectionist and government and governance will protect you from perhaps a much higher risk threshold of the individual who's willing to take the risk, willing to share information just because they want that more immediate gratification or that more immediate response. So that you've got individuals who are taking far greater risks in their own personal and home environment who want to take those risks, yet the health system is more protectionist and less than nimble. How do we square that?
I often joke that we're very comfortable with, you know, Netflix or other streaming services recommending which movies or shows we might want to watch next. But when it comes to predicting things around healthcare, it takes us a little bit longer to wrap our heads around it, right? You know, you speak to a very important dynamic, which is the pace of change in society has brought this sense of comfort with being more open with our data, whether it's, you know, what we like to watch or our behaviors that may put us at higher risk for certain health outcomes. We even have our phones tracking the number of steps that we take so that we can monitor our exercise, right? And so there's this definite discordance between the approaches that we've traditionally taken to protecting privacy of information in the health system and current societal, you know, attitudes and approaches to that same issue. You know, we have, as a society, most of us accepted the risk that if we do online banking, every now and then something can go wrong. There can be a breach and there can be an error, or there can be a, you know, a malicious incident that will impact our financial stability as a result. And so that is a risk that societally most of us have been willing to take. So how have we managed that in that industry, right? We've created a framework where the organizations provide those services and that enable access to data in that way are somewhat protected now from being able to impacted by any of those breaches. And that's an accepted level of risk. So if we think about transposing that to healthcare, what protections, what regulatory shifts, what sort of approaches do we need at that policy level to ensure that those data custodians also feel protected, that if we're going to make these data available in this way because our patients want us to do this and they want these improvements in services and they want this improved efficiency and quick pace of adoption of technologies like AI, we will be protected from any associated outcomes. We have yet to kind of square that circle because we don't quite have clarity at that level right now. So it really is at the policy level. And if you think about smaller organizations, I mean, I was talking earlier about financial services. Those are huge organizations. If you think about a smaller service provider, that may not be a risk that would sit well right now with that service provider. But how can we shift that, right? How can we create those protections so that that individual service provider or data custodian does not feel as threatened by the potential risk of anything going wrong when you make data available? So it's a bigger question, I think, at the policy level that really needs to be addressed and keep pace with change.
Yeah. And when you think about our health system in Ontario, we have over 620 long-term care homes. Some part of large organizations, a large number of them are small, independent, rural and northern homes who may have 40 residents and don't necessarily have the same kind of infrastructure. We think about broadband versus satellite links and so those technological elements, but yet at the same time, as we're thinking about the wait list with more than 45,000 people waiting for long-term care, a large number who will never actually be able to access long-term care. The promise of artificial intelligence in order to support them in their home environment or staying in the community and avoiding hospitalization, that promise is quite remarkable. I am curious from your perspective, how else can artificial intelligence and emerging technologies, including robotics or wearables, how can they be leveraged?
This is one of my favorite questions because this is where we can talk about all of the amazing innovation. You know, AI and technology promise a significant transformation in how elderly individuals live and how they are cared for, how we can enhance the quality of life, independence, and social engagement of elderly adults. There are three really interesting areas of development that I think we could anticipate seeing in the short term. First of all, the notion of AI-enabled virtual assistants to provide health support. These types of assistants can really drive healthy behaviors. So for example, AI nutritionists could generate personalized meal plans based on your individual health data, your preferences, your dietary requirements, and ensure optimal nutrition and health. Similarly, the concept of an AI-enabled fitness assistant or fitness equipment even could provide tailored exercise programs, monitor your progress, adjust routines to match your capabilities and goals. And even AI-enabled medication management assistants can provide monitoring and alerts to ensure compliance with treatment plans and reduce the risk of missed doses or duplicated doses. And I think a second area where AI can facilitate better care and support for aging individuals is in robotic-enabled mental and physical support. So some regions began experimenting with companion robots for the elderly, which can really engage in human-like conversations to reduce the feelings of loneliness and isolation. These can even assist with daily activities like cleaning and cooking or dressing. So the potential on the robotic side is significant. And then a third really interesting area of development is virtual and augmented reality, where technologies can offer seniors immersive experiences like virtual travel or virtual social interactions to, you know, engaging in cognitive exercises or therapies that are designed to enhance mental health and cognitive function. And these technologies can even enable seniors to interact with their family and their friends in virtual environments to provide a sense of connection despite physical or geographic distance. And the future of seniors' care empowered by AI and technology could really be characterized by enhanced health monitoring, improved social and mental well-being, more efficient personalized services, more integrated support, and these innovations would really help seniors lead healthier, more independent, and more fulfilling lives.
I love your sense of optimism, and you can just feel your passion. In one of our earlier episodes, we interviewed Mike Agarbo from British Columbia, who talked about how he was using Siri in supporting his parents. And so Siri was set up so that his parents could say, you know, call Mike, using wearables and Apple Watches for each of his parents so he could monitor them and look to see if there were any issues at home. And so it's really, it's given his parents more freedom. His parents were entirely supportive of it, but they were actually using tools that were outside of the health domain. And finding new uses for some of these technologies. And so you start thinking about how some of these pieces actually can escalate. But at the same time, when we are looking at this aging demographic, how do we not allow for some of these initiatives? We have a number of our long-term care homes who are using companion robots, who are using robots to clean their floors. We're certainly seeing new advances now in how we use technology. I am curious, as we think about that tension again, though, of the robotics and AI, you've spoken about how AI actually lends itself to more personalized care. How do you balance it with the humanity and the warm hand and the warm heart?
You know, it's really crucial to ensure that seniors receive the best possible care while maintaining that essential human touch that's vital to human well-being. And, you know, one strategy to achieve this is to ensure that we integrate AI in a way that augments human efforts and doesn't replace them. And I think this is true whether we're talking about seniors care or other domains of you know, human and computer interaction. At the end of the day, we are social beings. So using AI to handle routine and repetitive tasks like you know, monitoring vital signs or managing medication reminders or managing schedules to, you know, allow caregivers to focus more on providing emotional support and personalized care is a way that we can achieve that balance, right? We can take off of the plate of caregivers and providers some of the more rote and routine tasks, and we can free up capacity to provide the more human elements of service and support. And AI can assist healthcare professionals by analyzing data and providing insights and helping them make more informed decisions, but not replacing their judgment and their expertise. These are individuals who, through years of experience and interaction with the people for whom they're providing care, have developed judgment and capabilities of understanding at a very human level some of the nuances of human behavior and things that they need to look for in a way that our technical systems, at, you know, as they currently exist, can't do. And so we really need to prioritize human interaction, like, you know, socializing and group exercises or you know, engaging in regular check-ins as a way to, you know, enable that human-centered care. And certainly AI and other technologies can facilitate these aspects of service, but they don't replace those experiences. And so promoting collaboration between caregivers and health service professionals and technologists to ensure that AI tools are integrated into care practices that are human-centered is really critical. It's not just a technical solution. It's a solution that is intended to be integrated into a much larger context. And that needs the voices of all of the people who are going to be impacted by it, including the receivers of that care and that support. So I think that aspect of co-development and human-centered really needs to be embedded into every aspect of how we integrate these technologies into service provision. And then as well, that training for the people providing the services to ensure that they understand how to leverage these tools in a way that complement and not replace their services is critical. And I'd say on the other end of the equation, just gathering feedback from seniors, from their caregivers, from their families about the use of AI in their care and monitoring the impact of that automation on their health outcomes, on their, you know, the caregiver's workload, the overall satisfaction, their experiences, is one of the best ways that we can ensure we're achieving the right balance between technology and human-centered care.
So again, that word balance comes up. So there's a lot of juggling as we think about the balance within this domain, as we see artificial intelligence really evolve within the healthcare system. And I just really want to amplify your comment around judgment. Just because your plan of care says that you're supposed to receive insulin at a certain time doesn't necessarily mean that if your blood sugar is off, that you should get insulin. So you need that human judgment and that second check so that, you know, just as human judgment can be fallible, so too can AI be fallible. As you think about, to your point, around all of the data points that need to go in to make it more effective, it's not to say that it's foolproof.
No, absolutely. And that balance is so critical, right, between human judgment and the recommendations of an AI-enabled system. So on the one hand, the AI-enabled system is very likely, if it's a robust system, trained on many more data points than the average human provider would see even over the course of their career. But that being said, that human ability to perceive nuances in individual care can't be superseded. So, you know, while if we think about critical decisions, while, you know, AI can provide recommendations, if it's a complex or sensitive issue like healthcare, we need to ensure that the human caregivers and service providers have that final say, have that ability to assess the recommendation and determine if that is really something that makes sense in the current context. And in some cases, there's going to be great alignment. In some cases, there may not. And we, you know, we always say that the AI-enabled system is there to augment, but it is not there to replace.
Here's a question for you in terms of that augmentation, but also the evolution. What does this mean as we educate and train a new workforce? So if we think of how quickly some of these initiatives are moving, how do we prepare a workforce for this as we think about 8 years to become a doctor, 4 years to become a nurse, actually longer than 8 years to become a specialist? How do we cultivate a workforce when the tools that they're going to use are just changing so rapidly?
Yeah, it's you know, something that has come up in my conversations with service providers, but I have the privilege of teaching in this area at the university level. And one of the concerns that's expressed by students, and many of these students are practicing clinicians who are going back to school for further education on how to incorporate technology into their practice, is how do I keep up with the pace of change? You know, I've got this busy practice, I'm overwhelmed, and in the background ticking away is this new technology that I may not fully understand. And, you know, if it's generating recommendations related to the service that I'm providing, if I can't understand it myself, how can I explain it and validate it with patients? And it's a really important question. How do we keep up? Building first and foremost that baseline of AI literacy amongst service providers, an understanding and a comfort. But then there's the continuing education piece, in the same way that we expect clinicians to remain up to speed on the latest clinical trials or changes to practice. And we require that they maintain their credits and certifications for clinical services. We need to think about this as an incorporated element of clinical services, not a standalone, not just like, oh, we're going to train you on AI and that's a separate thing. And then here's your clinical service training and that's different. But think of those two things as inextricably intertwined. And, you know, in the same way that, for example, the way we all do business has been so impacted the internet, right? How we're communicating right now is because of the internet. How we communicate in even just basic office operations is often by email. All of that operational shift is embedded by a technology called the internet. And it is so pervasive. It is so much a part of our lives. We don't even think about it as a separate thing. So let's start thinking about AI the way we think about the internet. It's an enabler. It's pervasive. It is impacting domains from education to healthcare. It is a part of how we operate and how we function. So if we think about remaining at the forefront of any industry and at the top of our game, we need to consistently evolve with those technologies. We need to consistently ensure that we are incorporating them into our businesses and our functions in a way that allows us to deliver the best possible services. And one aspect of AI in particular that we really need to think about critically is it is not the same as a technology like, for example, an MRI machine. If my hospital that I'm working at buys a big new fancy MRI machine and they install it, I can just start using it. I can start, you know, sending my patients through that system, and I don't really need to think about it much. And it's going to function really well until maybe one day it needs some repairs, but it's going to function for a very long time. And none of us are really going to need to think too much about how it's functioning. With AI, if we're incorporating an AI-enabled solution, and remember the conversation we had earlier about data is the lifeblood of AI, that solution is going to continue to evolve as it gets fed more and more data. So if we incorporate a solution into a care pathway and it is something that is consistently learning from more data, we also need to be monitoring it. We need to make sure that as it's learning from more and more data points, the direction that it's evolving in is something that we can test rigorously, we can evaluate, we can make sure is still achieving what we intended to achieve. If there's data drift over time, if, for example, you have a system working in a larger health service provider organization, and the population that is being served by that organization starts to shift over time in terms of demographics, is that functioning system still doing what we intended it to do? Is it still working effectively across different dimensions of patient diversity? Is it still as accurately predicting what it's supposed to predict or doing what it's supposed to do as it was like 6 months ago or a year ago or 2 years ago? And that requires knowledge and expertise to be able to track and monitor. And that is currently something that is more on the technical side of an organization. But as we think about these solutions being incorporated into clinical services and care, that needs to be something that becomes a much more common piece for any one of us involved in that care pathway to be able to assess and to be able to monitor. And so it's, you know, to your point, it is a bit of a moving target. It isn't something that remains static, like you get your training and you're done. It is something that's going to require an ongoing engagement to ensure that we continue to deliver these services that are technology enabled in a way that's trustworthy and safe.
Well, and what a great note to end on, Roxanne. So often in organizations, the IT is somebody else's problem. So now we're looking at technology as being formally embedded in models of care, in quality improvement, in our broader risk management, in our education. It is everyone's responsibility as we go forward. So I really want to thank you for such a wonderful conversation. I love your passion. You give us great hope for the future.
Shauna, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about this today. I think it's such an exciting space for us to think creatively and dream big. Every single one of us is aging every day. We're getting closer to this being such an important and relevant area for every single person to be thinking about, either for themselves or their loved ones, and the opportunity for technology to help us do things better and more effectively is just nothing but possibility right now. So, I hope that the passion is shared, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about this today.
Thank you for listening to Coming of Age, the podcast that is changing the conversation on seniors' care and aging. We hope this episode brings a new perspective and inspires you to continue the conversation with your colleagues, friends, and family. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so that more listeners will join our community of changemakers in seniors care. Until next time, I'm your host, Donna Duncan. Keep well. This episode was generously sponsored by our sector champion, Point Click Care. Point Click Care is a leading healthcare technology platform enabling meaningful collaboration and access to real-time insights at any stage of a patient's healthcare journey. Point Click Care's single platform spans the care continuum, fostering proactive, holistic decision-making and improved outcomes for all. More than 25,000 long-term post-acute care providers and more than 1,600 hospitals use PointClick Care today. For more information on PointClick Care's software solutions, visit pointclickcare.com.